Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the first Learn Why You Lunch. I'm so happy to see you here. My name is Diane Corbin, and I am the owner and executive director of Merrimack Valley Trauma Services. I wanted to welcome you here today and let you know that this has been a while in the making. We're trying to figure out different ways that we can reach out to the community and share what we know. So this was a nice way for us to kind of come together and eat some lunch and learn about some new topics. So I hope this is helpful to you. So people, when they hear Merrimack Valley Trauma Services, they say, most of the time they say, Merrimack Valley who? Merrimack Valley is a space of, it's 25 cities and towns along the Merrimack River in Massachusetts, and it also hits New Hampshire. That's where we are from originally. So we were formed in 2010 in Massachusetts out of the need for trauma-focused services for kids and families. I was working in the early intervention system in Massachusetts and noticed that more and more children were coming into our system that had horrendous trauma histories, but no one in the community knew what to do with these kids. So we started implementing trauma principles and trauma-focused treatment right within the early intervention system, so birth to three, and worked very closely with parents so that we could get at these kids right away, right when the trauma happened, and also prevent future outcomes, which I'm sure we all know are not good outcomes for kids who have experienced ongoing trauma. Our model is very much about attachment. It's parent-led, and it's based in empowerment and strengths-based model. And we're going to talk about some of these principles as we go along about what we think therapy is. We also have a commitment to community partnerships. We're very interested in working with you because this work is really difficult. And without you, we can't really help. We can't help our families. We provide, for those that you don't know, we provide trauma-focused mental health counseling for kids as young as two, all the way up to adult. And also we work with families very closely. Some of you are probably saying, well, how do you do mental health counseling with two-year-olds? Well, our model is very much centered in parenting and parent support. When we work with two-year-olds or any age child, we always involve the parents and the caregivers. Parents could be foster parents, they could be kinship care parents, as well as biological parents. We have a program called Parenting Support Services. We provide lots of different services, including something called the Safe Kids, Healthy Families program, which is for caregivers of children who have been sexually abused, or there's a risk of sexual abuse. We also have our trauma-focused or trauma-sensitive parenting pyramid, which is a framework that I developed to help people understand the different levels of knowledge that are needed to help kids who've experienced trauma. And we also have a program called Intentional Parenting. And what we want to do is help parents who have their own trauma histories. We want to help them to understand how they're being activated by their own children, by their own children's trauma, and then give them strategies to separate these feelings. And then we also offer evaluation, consultation, and training services to school districts, child welfare agencies, to other clinicians, and also other community providers. So what makes MVTS different? I just want to quickly focus on this. First of all, our staff is what makes us different. And when I say our staff, I mean that everyone that works for us is licensed and trained and specifically supervised in trauma-focused services. Everyone is very committed to working with disadvantaged families. We want to help the families and specifically kids that need us the most. And I think what makes us different in terms of our staff is the commitment that you see. We're very picky about who we hire. As you can see, this woman at the top, Miriam Barrett, she works in Massachusetts. She's been with me for 12 years. And Brianne Hiller has been with me, who's the program director in Massachusetts, has been with me for about 11 years. once our staff come on, they see how different we are and they see, you know, how much support they get. We're very specific about our trauma sensitive work environment and how we can support our staff so that they can support the families and the children that we serve. So anyway, that's one thing that makes us a little bit different. Also, our focus on families, as I said before, you know, everything we do centers around parents and caregivers when we work with kids. So we like to say that when you come to MBTS, you get a 3-for-1. So we work with kids, we work with the parents, and then we also work with the relationship between the two. Parents are never left out in the waiting room. And I think that's very important that we tell parents that when they come in, or even before they come in, that they are going to be working as hard, if not harder, than their child. And 99% of parents say, yes, that's what I want. Because we know that parents want to help their kids. And sometimes to help your kids, you have to help yourself first. So we work very closely with parents. Like I said, we have some specific programs I can share with you at a different time. And then the third thing I think that makes MBTS very different is our low caseloads. Oftentimes what you'll see is, you know, you go into different practices and clinicians will have 50, 60, 70, even more cases. And we don't think that's a good recipe for progress. So we believe in quality over quantity. Low caseloads enable us to maintain a level of service and intensity that helps to build a relationship and helps us to make progress more quickly. Our goal is to get ourselves out of a job. Our goal is to give everything we can to clients so that they don't need us anymore. That's less time in therapy for kids, and that's what we think makes the most sense. We don't believe in keeping kids in therapy forever. Low caseloads means quicker progress, means kids get better, families get better more quickly. Okay, so let's talk now about the reason why we're here. What is mental health counseling? But before we talk about what mental health counseling is, I'd like to touch on what it is not. You know, when we hear the words mental health, many different images come to our mind, both for ourselves and the people that we serve. And I think that's really important that we keep that in mind because we do this every day. So we don't really think about, we know that mental health is a good thing, but unfortunately there's a lot of people that don't feel that way because they've had experiences that tell them otherwise. And of course, movies, TV shows, and social media feeds these stereotypes. And then the next image. So here's this man sitting, not even looking at the patient, we assume is the patient who's lying on the couch. No eye contact. And you see that she's kind of just talking. And this is the image that a lot of people get when we talk about mental health. So actually people will come into my office. I do have a love seat. I don't have a couch, but I have a love seat. And people will say, well, do you want me to lay down on the couch? I say, no, I don't want you to lie down. I mean, look at this picture and think about the power dynamics here. And they're not making any eye contact. And this person is exposed, right? Because they're lying down. So vulnerability there is some vulnerability in therapy, but I would never ask anybody to be this vulnerable, and especially those who have sexual abuse histories, trauma histories. So we are very careful, and that's part of the trauma-sensitive model, is that we just, even before we know somebody, we assume that anyone coming in for services has a trauma history, because most people do. And so to put people in a situation where they would have to be this vulnerable, not making eye contact and sort of disconnected from the relationship, that's not what mental health is. That's not what good mental health is. And then, of course, my favorite, Dr. Phil, who I think, you know, if you like Dr. Phil, if you don't like Dr. Phil, one thing you have to admit is this guy tells it like it is. But in the process, I feel like, at least when I've watched his show, I feel like he shames people. And shaming people is not helping people. Shaming people is about, you know, attracting more audiences and, you know, getting better ratings because it's interesting. I guess, but this is not what we do. And I think this is the biggest stigma that we come across in our work, is that people think, especially parents, when they come in, they think they are going to be shamed. They think that we are going to judge them. And that is not what we do. So again, thinking about how movies, TV shows, and social media feed stereotypes and make people even more afraid to take advantage of the services. So now that we know what therapy is not, let's talk about what therapy is. We believe therapy is a relationship based in trust and honesty, consistency, safety, and respect. As you can see, we have two people holding the piece of a puzzle and they're moving it together. It's not one person holding it above their head. It's not another person dragging the piece of puzzle into place, which is sometimes what happens in therapy, is that we're expected to lead someone through the process, which we don't do. It's really based on a trusting relationship. The other thing that we can say therapy is, it's about learning and it's about changing the brain. So creating new pathways by practicing new skills, seeing the world in different ways, and learning about yourself. And we always tell parents that therapy is about learning new strategies to change your behavior personally, the parent's behavior, but also improving your child's behavior. We are not focusing on changing the child. I just want to repeat that. We do not focus on changing the child. What we do as trauma therapists, as therapists, we focus on changing the environment around the child, so that the child has no choice but to change their behavior. And that's a very important distinction. And so therapy in learning can be a painful process. And I want to share a story with you about something that happened to me that reminded me what therapy is, what I think therapy is. And so I was in a mall and I was walking along, and you know how sometimes the skincare consultants will try to pull you in. They'll say, hey, do you want a free sample of this? And so I took the bait and this woman gave me a sample of something and said, oh, come on in. I have something else. I can work on your eyes or whatever. And I said, okay, I'll go in. So I sat down and she put a mirror in front of my face, like this close to my face, and proceeded to talk about all my flaws. Wow. I am not a vain person, but you know, I thought I looked pretty good that day. And this woman put this mirror right up against me and started pointing out, well, you have dark circles here, you have wrinkles, you have this, you have that. And I started to feel really bad about myself. And after I got over that, this experience, and I didn't buy any of her skincare, so it didn't really work in her favor. But I thought about it afterwards and I thought, you know, this is kind of like what therapy is. Because in that moment, when she put that mirror up to my face so that I had to look at myself, I had three choices. I could have run away screaming, saying, I don't want to look at this, right? And a lot of people do that. They avoid therapy because it's too scary to really look at yourself. The other choice that I had would be to close my eyes. I'm here, but I'm closing my eyes. I don't have to look at this. And really, what we think about people who avoid, again, avoidance, and coming to sessions saying, well, I'm enrolled in therapy, but they're really not doing the work. Because again, it's really painful sometimes to look at yourself and see who you are and then work to change it. And then the third choice I had was to really look in the mirror and accept and love the parts of me that I can't change. And so being able to say, okay, well, I have lines on my face, but these are from smiles, a lot of smiles I've had over my life, and wisdom and age. With age comes wisdom, hopefully. And I can teach people about a lot of things because of what I've learned in my life. And so it's about changing the story. And that's really what therapy is being able to look at yourself in an honest way. And the things that you don't like, you can cope with, but also working on changing your story. So I hope that that was a helpful story for you to understand what therapy is. I think of therapy as there's three types. So there's three purposes. So you have safety planning, you have validation and support, and you have skills building. Now, at one time, you may have all three of these things in therapy. So it's not just one or the other. But I think it's really important to look at the focus of each of these and the goals of each of these types of therapy. So the first one, safety planning, the goal is to prevent suicide and stabilize someone, right? The focus is the immediate present is survival. And we see going back to the hospital, the psychiatric hospital, sometimes we have to send people into the hospital because we have to prevent them from hurting themselves or hurting other people. So safety planning is very important, and it is about survival. So the second type of therapy is validation and support. And I think this is what people think of therapy. When they come in, they've had lots of experiences where they've only received validation and support. We call it the cow, the crisis of the week. So someone comes in and they just start talking about the crisis, what happened to them. So the focus is on the recent past in order to feel better now. So there's an immediate gratification. And I think that's one of the reasons why people are so attracted to this type of therapy, because it just feels better. So you leave the session and you feel pretty good about yourself. Unfortunately, when you just provide this type of therapy, it kind of keeps people stuck in their current circumstances and ways of thinking about their lives. Oftentimes, it can actually reinforce negative thoughts about, you know, if someone comes in and says, you know, I had such a terrible week and my husband was emotionally abusive again. And you just kind of sit there and you listen, you go, oh, that's terrible. And, you know, I'm really sorry to hear that, what happened. And, you know, you don't deserve to be treated that way. And it sort of ends there. Is that really helping someone get out of an unsafe situation? Is it really helping them to look at themselves and say, what is keeping me in this situation? That's where we come to skills building. The goal of skills building in therapy is to introduce different interventions to help someone change the brain, thereby changing the story. What therapists do is assign practice, things that they can practice or homework in between sessions, so that the child, the parent, whoever is the client can integrate what they're learning into their everyday life. So the focus is not just the present and it's not just the past, but it's the future as well. So it's integrating past information, and in trauma therapy, it would be the old story, which is the trauma. We're integrating that with the present skills and knowledge, which is our new story, to move clients into the future. It's about learning and growing so that people can heal. And the reason why this type of therapy, I think, is not as popular as others is because it's about delayed gratification. It takes time to heal. And like I said before with the mirror, sometimes it's uncomfortable. But what I want to tell you is that Merrimack Valley Trauma Services does all three of these, but you know, we are really focused on skills building. That's really what we do, because we believe that people can heal themselves. And we believe that we shouldn't be the one in their lives forever, because that would mean we don't trust that people can do it on their own. And we do believe that people can survive and thrive when they have the skills and support that they need. For those of you that don't know, dialectical behavioral therapy is a very popular therapy for adults as well as adolescents. It's associated with borderline personality disorder, trauma, people who have self-harming behaviors. It was developed by Marsha Linehan, and she talks about the options for responding to any problem. The first option is, of course, solve the problem. So leave, get out of the situation, or change the situation. The second option is to feel better about or tolerate the problem. So regulate your emotional response, accept and tolerate both the problem and your response to the problem. So in other words, sometimes you can't solve the problem and what you can't control, like let's figure out how to feel better and tolerate it. The third option to responding to any problem is to stay miserable, not to make any changes and stay stuck in the situation or even make things worse. For those clients who have been in therapy in the past, oftentimes their option is to stay miserable, right? Because they're getting the validation and support that they need to stay stuck. Merrimack Valley Trauma Services is not in the business of number three. We are in the business of helping people solve problems, and if they can't, to feel better about and tolerate that so that they can move through their lives, move through those feelings and get on with their lives. We're not in the business of helping people stay miserable. Three questions that this is something I developed as a way to help people reflect on why they want therapy, besides the fact that someone told them they think they should have it. The number one reason is, are you committed to this relationship? So for those who are coming in because they're having a problem in their relationship or they're having a problem with their child, are you committed? Meaning if this child, you know, you adopted this child and now you're thinking about actually giving the child up, what is the reason you're coming into therapy? Because therapy is really about being committed and wanting to change, right? Unless everyone involved is committed to therapy, it's not going to be effective. So we talk to parents about that when they come in, and we often involve both caregivers or, you know, other people that are involved in raising the child. We tell them that you have to be part of therapy too. And actually, you're going to be working just as hard, if not harder, than your child is. Oftentimes, people are surprised to hear that, but they welcome it because they want to know how to help their child, as I said before. So number one, are you committed to this relationship? Number two, is the problem for which you seek therapy solvable? So coming in and saying, I want that family member to change their behavior, or I want them to be different, is not a solvable problem, right? What is solvable is learning to respond. I can learn how to respond to that person's behavior differently so that I can make healthy choices and take care of myself. That's achievable. But coming into therapy because you want someone else to change their behavior, that's not solvable. The third question is, of course, are you willing to change your behavior in order to make progress toward your treatment goals? And this includes your child's treatment goals. So again, what we're doing is we're introducing this idea to parents that we're not trying to change the child. We're trying to change their response to their child. I'm reading a book called Atomic Habits. I don't know if anybody has heard of that. It's by James Clear. And he says that rather than asking rather than just setting a goal as to what you want in life, he talks about thinking about what you want to become. So in other words, the way I deciphered this and connected it to therapy is rather than asking a client what their goals are, we ask who they want to become. And then we help them take the steps every day to act like that person. That's how you change a habit. That's how you reach a goal. So in other words, someone comes in and they say, I want to be happy. That's my goal. You know, so happiness is different for everyone. So rather than just saying, okay, that's your goal, you want to be happy, we ask, well, how do happy people act? What would you be doing differently if you were happy? So now it's a behavioral measurable goal. Or a parent says, I want to be a good parent. I want to be a great parent. Then we tell them, you don't have to be a great parent. You can just be a good enough parent. It's okay. And you won't hurt your child. But again, asking them, what would you be doing that would make you feel like a great parent? It's being able to look at your own behavior and saying, I want to be something else. I want to make this transformation. And how do I do it? Is I take small steps and I act as if I'm moving toward this goal. when we tell people what is expected of them as they come into therapy, sometimes they get a little nervous, which is understandable because oftentimes they haven't been asked to participate in therapy. You know, I'm thinking about caregivers now. And so what we do is we sort of normalize this experience. We tell them that, you know, when you're, if everybody can see my pointer here. So here's my pointer. So this is kind of you on your life, in your life, and you are kind of doing the same thing every day, and your habits are sort of formed, and it becomes a trench after a while, right? It becomes it's deeply entrenched, these habits. However, in therapy, what we help you do is we help you make the journey over this embankment here. We help you come up with new ideas and new ways of thinking so that instead of just going down the same road, we help you come up and develop a new road. And that takes time and energy. Some people will come into therapy and say, well, I want my kid fixed in 6 months, right? We help them understand that habits take time to change, and that also takes intention and energy. It's important to remember that so that people don't lose faith and don't lose hope that things can change. The other concept that I think is important is that therapists know what their roles are and stay in their lane. And I have had many conversations with people about what our role is as a community therapist. So the first concept I want to share with you is that I am not an auto mechanic. I work at AutoZone. What I mean by that is that I don't fix kids and I don't fix people. I help them develop. So you think about AutoZone, you go in and they help you diagnose what's wrong with the car and they sell you the parts. They sell you the information that you need to fix your own car. And that's what I think a good therapist is someone who is an unbiased person who wants the best for you and your family. They help you figure out what's going on and they help you figure out the steps to get there. But it's up to you to make that journey. We can't pull people through therapy. We need to walk beside them. So I always say we walk beside people and then we step back and we root them on. We're their biggest cheerleaders because we want them to be able to do it by themselves. There are some therapists that believe their role is to, you know, give opinions or decide where a child's going to live or decide, you know, make custody decisions or have a role in that in a legal decision. And we don't do that at Merrimack Valley Trauma Services because we are biased in a way. I mean, we want to help kids and families. If we are asked to give our opinion about where a child should live or parental capacity, that is not the role of a community therapist. That is the role of a trauma evaluator. And we do evaluations, but that's not our role as a therapist. So I just want to put that out there because I think that a lot is expected of therapists. And when people don't know what to do, their first instinct is to ask the therapist. But when we get put into a place that we are in a dual role, so we're acting as someone who has authority now over a family, as well as trying to help them and build that relationship with them, things get really messy and it can compromise the therapeutic relationship. And that is something that we will not compromise on. Again, parents are key. So they are involved in every step of the process. We want them to understand their child's behavior. We want them to understand. It's astounding how many people come in and they say, well, my kid's been in therapy for 6 years. And I tell them, well, what do you know about this diagnosis? And they say, nothing. No one's ever talked to me about my child's diagnosis. We don't even know what it is. I'm blown away by that because that is one of our jobs, is to teach parents about what is going on for their child and how to help. We also help identify triggers to maladaptive behaviors. We ask them to identify triggers, right? So they come in and tell us what is going on. This happened, and I'm not sure why, but this is what happened at home. they share this information with us so that we can help them determine what is going on for this child and how to help and how to prevent misbehavior. We also teach parents how to calm themselves down, how to self-regulate, how to model these skills. Modeling is so important for parents. They are their children's greatest teachers. We teach them how to model appropriate skills for their kids. And then we also teach them, and this is part of the intentional family therapy program that we have, the intentional parenting program, is we teach them how to respond versus react to negative behaviors. We're getting triggered as a parent. We help them understand how they're getting triggered, but how to separate from that and how to respond to a child in order to promote their sense of safety, right? And their sense of competency when they learn these new skills, really in partnership with parents to do that. And we also help them to build trust in their relationship with their child. I often say, and parents laugh when I say this, but I said, well, it doesn't matter as much if your child likes me, but it matters if you like me. And I can work with a kid who doesn't want to come to therapy, but it's really hard to work with a family if the parent doesn't want therapy. You know, this relationship that we build with parents is so key to our making progress with children, because children will see that therapy is important because parents have sent that message that it's important. We want to have a trusting and caring relationship with the child, but our goal is to build the attachment relationship. So build trust in the relationship between the parent and the child through consistency and attunement and time and positive touch. And then finally, in every way we can, we want to help the parent share with their child that no matter what, I love you and I'm never going to give up on you. Parents are really key to the work that we do. Some tips for successful treatment: be patient and realistic. And we tell parents that therapy takes time. It's not just about talking through what happened. If it was just about talking about what happened, and I'm thinking about trauma right now, then you wouldn't need us. You just go to a good friend and talk about what happened in the past, and you know, you'd be fine. You wouldn't have to come to therapy. It's much more than that. You get out of therapy what you put into it, like anything else in life. So being present, being involved, asking questions. I love when people ask me questions, and sometimes they're given the message that it's not okay to ask questions of doctors or counselors or whoever. And I want people to ask me questions. I want people to keep me on my toes, because that's my job, is to explain to people, to share my knowledge, to share my expertise with parents. And so asking questions and challenging a therapist is actually a sign of a very positive, healthy relationship, as long as it's done in a respectful way, right? Trusting the process and knowing that it's going to be uncomfortable sometimes, but that's part of change and growth. And then keeping an open mind to learning new skills to change the brain. We have, you know, in this culture, I come from Massachusetts. It's a different culture. It's a different way of looking at the world. It's a different way of parenting sometimes. And so my job is to keep an open mind and talk to people about what they grew up, how they grew up, how they were parented, and then help to develop new skills and help them think of things in a different way and see us as a resource for them, not someone who's going to judge them for how they're parenting their child, but someone who says to them, look, there's a different way to do this. Are you interested? Because I'd love to share it with you. Therapy only works when it is consistent. So someone, you know, sometimes clients think that, oh, I'm just going to come in when I'm having a bad day. But no, because remember, therapy is about changing the brain. It's about building knowledge and changing habits. And that only works when it's consistent. And then, of course, I say this so much, but practice what you learn, or help your child practice by modeling the skills for them, because that's what gets people to where they want to be. That's what helps people meet their therapy goals. I leave you with this quote: as long as you feel pain, you're still alive. As long as you make mistakes, you're still human. And as long as you keep trying, there's still hope. Where would we be without hope? And I think that if that's the only thing that we can give people the first time they come in to our to Merrimack Valley Trauma Services, that's what we try to do, is to instill hope and tell them that it's not going to be like this forever. We are going to help you. It's a very, very powerful gift to be able to give somebody hope. Would anyone like to speak to what this information, what they learned today, what they didn't maybe know before, or how they're thinking about things a little differently in terms of mental health?
I think I have a better understanding of the process and the expectations placed on the parents, because I just know a lot of parents who would be like, fix my child.
Right.
And, oh, this shouldn't require any work on my part. So, and I do wonder sometimes if, I mean, do you get the families that you realize, okay, we're not making any forward progress. They're just not, we're not getting anywhere. And then there's got to be a point at which, you know, this is not effective right now for you or a baby. Yes. You're not ready for this.
We actually tell parents right at the beginning, we give them very clear expectations throughout the whole process. Before they even come in, we tell them what the expectation is that they're participating in therapy. We obtain a day and a time that is mutually convenient for both the therapist and the caregiver or the adult client. So we give everybody their own weekly time slot right at the beginning. And that way people anticipate when they're coming in, there's no confusion. We know when we're going to see someone, and very importantly, a child can anticipate when they're coming in. They know when they're going to see their therapist. We do that, and then we also talk to them about the commitment needed, and we ask right before, even before they come in to the intake, are you able to make a commitment to therapy? And if they say no, we say, well, this is probably not going to work for you. So, but very rarely does someone say no. Usually parents will be like, yes, we're desperate. We need help. So we set that expectation up at the beginning. And then during the intake session, we talk to people about the importance of commitment and what a commitment looks like. So it's not just bringing your child to therapy and then going into the waiting room. It's participating in the sessions. It's telling us what's going on in between sessions. You know, giving us a call before the therapy session. It's participating in the family consults, which are considered family therapy without client present. So because we work with kids once a week, and we usually have parents meet with parents once a week. And that can be either in person or it can be through teletherapy if it's more convenient for the parent. So we tell them that, you know, this is going to be hard work for you. And if you decide, like within 6 months, if we're seeing that we're not making progress and you're not invested in this, then this probably doesn't make sense. It probably makes sense to close. So we tell them that at the beginning, but we give them a good 6 months. So it's not like we're just dropping people. We are saying to them, this is a different type of therapy. And we want you to be involved. And what we can tell you is if you are invested in this, this will help your family. And this, and a lot of times it changes their lives.
Can I tack on to that for a quick second?
Yes,
too?
Of course.
There's something else that I think that I've noticed is in the rare case that it does come up that there, you know, are barriers in the way that, you know, maybe now is not the right time or place for them to have this intensive kind of level of therapy. What I have found is the vast majority of those cases, in my experience anyway, want to come back in the future. It is a right now at this moment, I have what I need, or right now at this moment, I can't commit to what I need to do, but I want to come back in the future when some of these barriers aren't so present so that I can continue to work through or resolve what I need to resolve, which I think, again, kind of goes to speak to a lot of what makes MVTS a little bit different with the way that we approach families and the way that we approach kind of the treatment that we do, that people are able to get to the point where they can identify that either I've gotten what I need for this moment, but I recognize that I can't come back if I need to, or they get to a point where they recognize that this does require that kind of commitment and they want to be able to kind of get what they need and establish their life in a way that they're able to really be all in so that this can be kind of their last stop therapy.
Well said, Tristan.
is this geared towards the adult population as far as mental health therapy?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, it is. And everything that we talked about today, this information, this presentation, or parts of this presentation are shared with adult clients. Because again, we don't want to work with adults in isolation. We want to help them build their natural support network, whether that's family, friends, spouse, boyfriends, girlfriends, whoever. It's really important that we help them to build self-sufficiency. And we can't do that if they are wholly reliant on us.
Okay.
So all the concepts that we talked about today are directly applicable to our adult clients.
Okay. For your adult clients, if transportation or the county was of an issue, are there virtual sessions as well? Okay.
Yes. So we try to offer a hybrid model. So we offer in-person in our office in North Charleston, and we also offer virtual sessions. However, we tell people that there are limits to the teletherapy sessions. Okay. And one of them is we can't process trauma through teletherapy. I mean, I know there are some clinicians that are doing this, but I don't feel comfortable. I don't think it's ethical. I think it's unsafe.
Right.
So I won't do that. So if we get to a point where we're going to process trauma, like through EMDR, eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing therapy, I will tell them you'd have to come in. If we're just doing cognitive behavioral therapy and there's no active substance use, suicidal or homicidal ideation, there's no safety concerns, then it could be appropriate to meet with that client through teletherapy. But again, I want to stress mental health counseling. Mental health, as I said before, is about a relationship. It's harder to build relationships through screens. I just want to throw that out there. Now, I know that I'm very grateful that we're able to offer teletherapy because it's opened up access to lots of different people that maybe would not have been able to take advantage.
Right.
So I'm very grateful that we can offer it. Well, I really appreciate you being here. I look forward to seeing you next month. I hope you enjoy your weekend. Thank you for being here. And you have my contact information if you have any other questions or you'd like to run anything by me. I would like to be a resource for you, even if you're not making a referral to Merrimack Valley Trauma Services, I want to be a resource for you in the community that you can reach out to me if you have a question. So have a wonderful weekend. And again, thank you for being here.
Learn while you lunch. You've got to learn while you lunch. There's so much to